I want to know, what is it that you fight for in your business, your mission, so to speak?
Gosh, I think our mission is pretty straightforward. We kind of talked about our tagline, right? Which is about humanizing technology. But our mission is really just to do fantastic things and help solve problems with technology. We believe that the ROI is there for technology and to be honest with people and to evaluate, and if it's not. And so there are times where there are business challenges that we consult with, think through, and identify that a custom solution isn't what needs to be built. What you actually should do is take this off-the-shelf thing and tie it to this, and then you can have this much faster and cheaper, back to your sort of iron triangle connection. So really, it's about just contributing back to the world and doing so in a fair and honest and consultative way. We are not always the best fit, and custom software isn't always the only answer. And so that honesty and treating people the way you want to be treated, I think, is really something that we fight for and is just core in our values. One of our core values is fun.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people, every one of them from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, the everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell, from the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome back to The Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having Nikki Purcell on the line. Nikki, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I'm glad to have you here. What I wanted to do as we got into this was just dive into your introduction real quick and make sure that our audience knows who you are, and then we'll just dive into your story. So currently, Nikki is the owner and president of a custom software development firm. She supports clients across a diverse set of industries. And Insight was founded 25 years ago with the promise that it always keep humanity at the forefront of technology, and just as important today as it was 25 years ago. So as a lifelong learner, she's currently on her 4th postgraduate program, this time completing your certification in, I don't know what that is, AI ML, so artificial intelligence and machine learning. Yeah. So I guess as we dive into this, why don't you start off and tell me a little bit about what it is that you're known for, what your company is known for, what is it that you do for people today?
Sure. Well, Insight, as mentioned, is really a custom software development firm. So what does that mean when you boil it down? It means we do websites, we do business applications, we do native applications. But the word custom in there is important in the sense that we don't really prescribe any solutions for our client. We get to know them. We learn about their business. We learn what they identify as their challenges. And then ultimately, we will customize some solutions for them. And generally speaking, we can find a technology solution that helps to solve some of those business problems. So that's what Insight is known for. Obviously, as mentioned, since we've been around for 25 years, actually next month in May, it is the 26th anniversary for Insight. We've seen a lot in those years. The company was actually founded by Adrian Palmer, not myself. I stepped into this role a number of years later, but it was started just 8 years after the launch of the commercial internet. So you can imagine the different technologies and different types of challenges that we've been a part of helping to solve, which just makes it really exciting. So that's what Insight's known for.
How about you personally? What are you known for?
Gosh, I would say that people who would use adjectives to describe me would maybe say boundless energy, which is good and bad. I think it's good because I'm the one who has all the energy, but I'm one of those people that hit the ground running at a little bit after 5 a.m. every day and seem to just always find a way to cram more in than is probably what should happen. But it's fun for me. And I just think it's just, there's always more to do. There's always more that we could be doing. But I know that is not always the same sort of feeling that everybody has. So being able to slow down a bit is a challenge for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know you're sort of in a unique position compared to some of our normal guests in that you took over this company instead of starting it yourself. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because that's a different way to become an entrepreneur, to take over a company. Now, I'm curious, did you come up from like in the ranks, or did you come in as an outsider? What does that story look like? How did you get into running a company the size of Insight?
Yeah, actually as an outsider, to get to the heart of your question right off the bat. I actually, when I joined Insight, did not know any of the folks who worked here directly. Came in through my co-owner today and the founder, who helped recruit me over to lead Insight. And it is a little bit of a different sort of tale. I would say that my entrepreneurial journey, if you want to refer to that, really started outside of being at a smaller or any kind of startup. It started out in what is more traditional corporate America world. And then finding opportunities within large company, those that are even, you know, publicly traded, where I work, to find entrepreneurial startup chances. Whether that was taking a subset of a team and giving a very specific challenge and a period of time to be able to come out with something great in the form of a new product or service, or really just trying to identify how to keep what might be a, you know, growing in age kind of industry present and really at the leading edge of technology and saying, okay, we've got to act as entrepreneurs and how do we do that from a cultural perspective? So my background isn't necessarily, as you mentioned and pointed out, the same as some of your guests. It's stepping into the shoes of an entrepreneur who ultimately stays connected as part of our board of directors, but not in the day-to-day business, which is a daunting task, to be quite frank, but certainly one that's really fun.
Yeah. So your origin story is starting off essentially in corporate America and then moving up and then taking over. It's definitely a unique way to end up running a company like that. So just for our audience's sake, how big is Insight? Like, how big is your team? And you mentioned having a board of directors. Like, is it just a couple of people? Or you guys have hundreds of people? Where are you on that small business scale?
No. We're on the smaller boutique side. Our board of directors is really just made up by the co-owners, our CFO, and it's really to hold ourselves accountable. I come from, obviously, in my background, publicly traded companies and have been, obviously, on the board of directors for those. But it's really good practice, I think, despite the size of the company and really just number of people. It's about being accountable to looking at the business and spending as much time on the business as in the business. And it's a great opportunity for me, who's in the leadership role for it, to step out and review it really, you know, from that sort of 10,000 foot view, because it's really easy to get in the weeds.
Yeah.
And stay there, quite frankly.
So I want to talk a little bit about your superpowers that you've developed over the course of, you know, your career here and then specifically at Insight. Every iconic hero has a superpower, whether that's your fancy flying suit made by your, you know, genius intellect or the ability to call down thunder from the sky or super strength like, you know, Superman or Wonder Woman. In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills you were born with or you've developed over the course of your career that really energize all your other skills. And so the superpower is what sets you apart, allows you to help your people slay their villains and come on top of their own journeys. And the way I like to frame it for my guests is if you look at all the skills you've developed, you probably have a common thread that sort of ties all those skills together. And that common thread is probably where your superpower is. So what do you think your superpower is as the CEO of Insight?
I guess I would say that it's probably in communication, fueled by my innate curiosity and just knack for connecting the dots. I mean, both those things are important, but if you can't communicate it, I don't know really what the success of that is. Certainly you don't come out of the womb communicating, or if you do, that's problematic. I actually have an identical twin, and as babies, we had what my mom would refer to as our own language. So maybe I did come out communicating. It's just nobody but my sister could understand it. I would say at this stage, probably where I use that superpower most is just adapting the narrative, the communication to the audience. So I'm one of those people that throws myself out of my comfort zones pretty regularly, partly to grow, but whether that's me moderating a conference in front of, you know, hundreds of folks, or whether that's one-on-one or addressing, you know, our team as a company, I really try to tailor the audience and just have a blend of clarity and engagement, because that's what I feel like it all comes down to. I have sort of a professional training in it. My degree was actually Bachelor of Journalism undergrad. And so learning to be able to speak clearly on camera, very different than this, is something that I went to school for. So it's just something I've been able to continue to try to grow in, you know, throughout my career.
Yeah, I think communication is one of those superpowers. I talk to my kids about this all the time, that communication is a superpower that you can develop and that everyone absolutely should. Because unlike almost any other superpower, a lot of them you have to have some sort of skill or talent in. But communication is something that, like you said, you come out of the womb with no ability to communicate and you learn all of it. Like, and there's really no limit to how good of a communicator you can become. And it's one of those things that, like, it serves every other thing you do, right? It doesn't matter if you're leading a team or if you're leading a family or if you're trying to get your waitress to not spit in your food at a restaurant, right? Like, good communication, because it applies in all of the categories. And the better you are at it, the better outcomes you can get. And
no, it's cool that, you know, just given the state of media these days, there are a lot of people who question whether or not you'd go get a Bachelor of Journalism degree, if you're going to go work for a newspaper company, or what that looks like. And I don't sort of second guess that decision for a minute. I feel like communication, as you said, it's just as important in the written word as it is in the spoken word and how you present. So knowing it seemed for a while to be something that was just part of the territory, but it's almost to me getting an increasing focus, particularly when you brought up kids, because they're so accustomed to looking at screen.
Yeah.
And it's really very different when you are one-on-one with someone and making eye contact and being successful at clearly communicating, not just like my teenagers do at times, which is just sort of grunt their response back. Yeah.
I have a funny thought about that. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's based on a much better book, but there's a scene in the movie where the adventurers end up on another planet. And one of the things that this planet has is anytime that you have a thought, a big giant fly swatter comes out and slaps you in the face. And I was like, I want one of those, except every time my teenager makes that grunt noise, it just pops up and smacks them.
There you go. Instant reminder, right?
Yeah. Like, no, that's not going to work.
Not going to work.
Yeah. Because, you know, I don't want to beat them for it. I don't think like that's a good way to do it. But just a quick little reminder, like, oh, grunting's not good communication.
Right. And usually the grunt comes like two or three times after they've been prompted with a question and there's been no answer. And it's like, can you hear me? Did I actually just say something? And then you get the grunt response. You're like, really? I waited for that.
You waited three or four times to get it.
That's right. Exactly.
At least it's universal among teenagers. Maybe it's just a language we don't understand anymore because we're not teenagers anymore.
Possibly. As long as they come back around and start having real conversations, I'll be fine.
They'll be fine. So let's talk then about the flip side then. So if your superpower is communication, there's always the fatal flaw, right? And so every Superman has his kryptonite, or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad. You probably have a flaw that's held you back in your business, something you struggled with. For me, it was things like perfectionism, right? I use perfectionism a lot of times as a crutch to keep from shipping, right? Not actually putting product out in the marketplace, because you always make it just a little bit better and then you're not actually serving anyone. Or one of my other ones that I struggled with for a long time was lack of self-care, which when I let my clients walk all over me, I didn't have good boundaries with my time, stuff like that. And I think, but more important than what is the flaw is how have you worked to overcome it so that our audience, so you can continue to grow and hopefully your experience will help our audience learn a little bit from your experience.
So I would say mine has got to be patience. If you haven't sort of figured it out yet, I tend to talk quickly. And that's not even like on speed up mode, but it's one of those things that I speak almost as quickly as the words come into my mouth. And there were times where I used to joke that, you know, if this doesn't work out, I could potentially, you know, work as an auctioneer. And so being able to take some of the ideas I have, some of the things that I think are just free flowing, and being a little patient with how they get enacted and how long they might actually take to breathe to actually see success. There's a little bit of me that has sort of that entrepreneurial spirit that is like squirrel, you know, and then you're off to where that is going. And the shiny object can be really distracting. And I think as much as I try, it's going to be one of those lifelong challenges to be able to just be patient. And maybe, you know, the second part of your question was about how I overcome it. I tend to have folks around me that I've intentionally put in place from an accountability perspective. And the other thing that I think I try to do is, you know, whenever something brand new has started or there's a change, at the very beginning of it, I try to identify how long we're going to give that thing to try. I don't like change just for the sake of change, but I also think that, you know, evolution is critical. And so I want to try to define up front, gosh, does this seem like something where 90 days from now we should know if it's working? Or is this a product we're launching and it needs, you know, 2 years to really know, like, can it hit the market the way that it should be in round numbers? So there is a little bit of that predetermining what time frame I have to give myself in order to kind of offset the lack of patience I tend to have.
I like that. I like both of those, actually, having someone in place that's like helping you with your patience. I tend to be a lot of the same way. I grew up in Southern California, and so I learned to talk much faster than the rest of the country did. So like when I went to college and the Midwest, I spent the first like year and a half of people telling me to slow down so they could keep up with me. And then you realize that like, oh, like not everyone speaks that quickly. And so you have, in order to be a good communicator, you have to learn to moderate your speed. And it's interesting to me that like you've sort of struggled with the same thing, because it's, you know, as with communication as a superpower, learning to moderate your speed so everyone else, you know, so that all the people in your room can understand what you're saying is, it's part of that skill that you have to develop. And
I'm in business. I had someone much smarter than me tell me once when I got into a role and we needed to actually deprecate some products and identify which ones we were keeping and how we were going to kind of manage all of them. And he said to me, you know, sometimes you actually have to slow down to speed up. And it sounded like one of those isms that I was like, I should remember that, because I don't often remind myself that, you know, to get further, sometimes you have to kind of slow down to do that. So sure, it's throttling speech, but it's also throttling some ideas and like yeah. I said, being patient.
My my martial arts teacher actually tells us this all the time. He'll say, slow is smooth is fast, fast is good. Right. And so, sometimes you have to go slow so you can go fast. And yeah. And then the other one that you mentioned was having people who are help you to be accountable to your own patience and whatnot. I do something similar where like I tend to be a really good starter. Like I can figure out the problem and solve the thing and get something put in place. But then like maintenance or like caring about it after the initial thinking has been done, like I just don't. So I have to have other people that are like there really like to be the maintainers and the people who are taking care of the details and like working on all those things. But I'm more like, okay, here's a problem. Here's our solution for it. Let's get that implemented. And I'm really interested all the way up until that part is solved. And then, you know, it needs to continue living on. I'm not good at the continue living on part.
Right. So, well, but, you know, identifying that, right, is half the battle because then you can find the right people to help you carry it on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to move on and talk a little about your clients. And so I call this your common enemy, right? Every superhero has an arch nemesis. And it's a thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. And in the world of business, it takes on a lot of forms. But generally speaking, we put in the contact with your clients and it's a mindset or a flaw that you constantly have to fight to overcome, right? So that you can actually get the people that come to you the results that they came to you for, right? So in your world, in the world of building software for clients at a high level, what is it that you guys regularly have to fight to overcome either in your sales or your marketing or in your service delivery? What's your big common enemy?
I think getting the full picture. Generally speaking, our clients have multiple things on their plate. They might be a CIO, they might be a CMO, they might be someone who is tasked with building with us a website, an application, some sort of software solution, but that's one part of their total job. And in doing so, we're working with them on the data that we need. We're working with them on the results so that we can sort of build out what that ROI is because we're always seeking to create value. And a lot of times it's still one view, not the broader view of their entire world or their entire business. And there are lots and lots of data points and just really interesting stuff that happens outside of purview of this space. And for me, I would say it's being able to get all of that information to be able to really be an extension of that. And it's just natural, I think, from you know how people divide up what they focus on and what they do with it to think, okay, well, they need this information because we're talking about this project. But the broader story and the broader knowledge base of their total business and different challenges they're facing is really where we seek to get into the middle of and also where I feel like we shine the most because we learn most about the business and the different things that might correlate to the success we're trying to build that they wouldn't otherwise, you know, like I said earlier, connect the dots on.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That year, the challenge is getting that broader, bigger picture and other parts of their business outside of what we're working on together to the forefront of the conversation.
So I have an example in my business, and I'm just curious if it's the right kind of thing. So I'm going to tell you, and then I want to find out if this is what you actually mean. So we've been in the process of building some relational databases to manage the operational side of our business. And one of the things that I've been noticing as we've been building these out is like we're building our main like service delivery database. And the service delivery database has like people that are associated with that, right? The tasks that they're doing. And then those people have jobs that are associated with them. Those jobs have pay rates. And then the tasks that are in the thing, they connect to SOPs. And I'm realizing like as we're going through all of this, like all of this stuff is connected. And so where we might have a specific task list, it's like, hey, get these things done. If we can actually build out the software part to pull in data from the people and pull in the job details and pull in the hourly rates and to pull in the SOPs and to pull in all the different pieces, the actual end product for our staff to go through and do the software build out that we're working on actually works a lot better as opposed to us, you know, like handwriting all that stuff in, actually like building the databases. I'm not sure if that's a good example or not, but that's sort of what you're talking about is just pulling in all the pieces.
Well, I think it's a great example. I think that even in our business, we, outsource and use a third-party project management software because they're working with so many different partners that they have got engineers that have been working on and fine-tuning it for so long that they've seen a lot of different challenges and a lot of different ways that people use it. I think that's a perfect example. I think the other one is one that's a little bit more present to me, kind of where I'm at in my studying because I'm doing that,
AI
outside
machine
of work, trying to get up to speed in that, but it is the idea that, every business has various data points and sometimes they're in different databases, but where are the correlations between them? And are we able to take a look at some of those and draw conclusions where one piece of data is affecting another, but without even knowing about them, we wouldn't even have the ability to draw that correlation.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I find just fascinating and being able to have the full sort of breadth of that because we can set up, ways to measure data on a website or how something is performing in a Google or Adobe or, even Tableau. But at the end of the day, that's all data. And a lot of the stuff that, you know, we could be missing if we're not getting it directly from our clients is sometimes a little bit more anecdotal, and recognizing what the sort of leading indicators are and what the actual metrics are that are driving some things that might not be clear at first in the data.
Yeah. It's really interesting because like we've been looking at a couple of different things like that. So like in our business, one of the things that we've been looking at is like we do podcasting for clients and different industries. And because we're starting to pull the databases together, we can look at like how long does the post-production take in one industry versus another? Because if the post-production takes longer, we're charging the same prices. So we have more margin in one industry than we might in another. And maybe that affects how we price in that industry, or maybe that means we don't serve in that industry anymore. But like, that's not the kind of thing that if you didn't have all the data connected, you wouldn't be able to see. Yeah.
Perfect example.
Yeah, which is really fascinating. And then to your point, you know, you said you've been studying the AI and the machine learning stuff. When you start actually making all your database data available, some of these machine learning algorithms and the AI stuff that people are talking about, it can hold so much more data in its, you know, virtual head at the same time than almost any human can. So you can draw correlations and look at data points that you never could before. And so it, like, there is benefits to figuring out how to get access to all of your data or get all of your data accessible by some of these new algorithms that are available nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, it's just fascinating. I feel like AI right now is one of those things that, like, it's been around for a while, but it's just now being talked about all the time. And it's a little like when you're going shopping for, you know, a new car, which I had to do recently because mine died. And I was like, oh, looking at this model. That's so interesting. I've never seen one of those. But then every red light I got to, there's one of those cars. And I was like, okay, it really is everywhere. But if you're not looking for it, you sort of don't see it. And it's really something that just feels like it's so buzzy. And I'm trying to sort of go, okay, everyone's not using it and everything isn't AI. But being smarter and getting out sort of in front of what impact it can really have on businesses is a pretty cool place to be right now, because it's just going to just change things, I believe, so dramatically in the future.
Yeah, that's one of the things you say it's been around for a while, and it really has, because it just got rebranded last year. It's been called machine learning for like 15 years, and we've been all sort of playing with it in all sorts of different ways. And you've used it on your phone, like our audience here, like if you pull out your iPhone and type in someone's name and it pulls up all their faces, that's machine learning. Like it's been going on for, you know, more than a decade. But last year it got rebranded as AI, and then everyone exploded all over it for like using it for things, which is, you know, it's probably a good thing, but it's, you know, it's the thing that cracks me up about it is it's not artificial intelligence, right? It's machine learning, just with a new name.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just reached that point where people go, oh, I went to ChatGPT. Okay, so now I use machine learning. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. The thing that I've been doing some teaching on AI, and I'll do some examples where I'll be like, pull out your iPhone. And I'm like, you know this feature that you've been using for several years? AI. This one that you've been learning. Yeah. There's 3, 4, 5. And they're like, oh. I'm like, yeah, there you go. Now you're seeing, like, this isn't new. It's just a different interface that you're not used to. And anyways, there's lots of things you can do with it. But yeah, I'm with you. As far as business goes, the ones who are paying attention and are learning to implement these things are going to surpass the businesses that skip it quickly. Sure. So I think it's an important place to be playing and dipping your toes in.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I don't think that, you know, as someone wiser than me once said, you know, AI isn't coming for your job, but people who use AI might be. Yeah. So, you know, don't sit on the sidelines for this one entirely. Yeah.
That's one of the things that, like, it cracks me up. So we started using some of the generative text machine learning protocols like ChatGPT and other ones in our writing segment for our podcast hosts. And we've been able to do a whole bunch of things with that. But the outcome of that is we took our writing stuff and we went from hiring $5 an hour writers overseas to hiring $15 an hour writers in the United States and quartering the amount of time that it took them to do the work. And increasing the output, increasing the quality of the output, increasing the speed that they're doing the output. So I tell people you can break the iron triangle. Iron triangle is better, cheaper, faster. Pick two. You don't have to pick two anymore, right? And so if your team is trying to compete with my team, they're going to get crushed if they're not doing what we're doing, right? So we talk about that in two different ways. One of them is you're trying to compete with my team because you're trying to replace your people with robots. My team will beat yours, right? Because my team is a human team that's empowered, that's working together with the robots. Or if you're not using the robots at all, right, you're just trying to overcome it with labor, you're also going to get beat by someone who's, you know, making a marriage of the two.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think honestly, that's a great segue into what Insight was even founded on. I mean, 26 years ago, nobody was thinking about AI and machine learning as being a baseline of something that we would do. But the tagline at the time was around humanizing technology.
Yeah.
And I don't think it changes. Some people think, well, that must be old now because everything's going to be replaced, like you said, sort of by robots. And what is the role of humans in this? And it's actually huge. And the one thing that I think is always important is any technology, any solution we're building is generally for humans to use. So regardless of how it's getting built and what percentage of that is human slash not, at the end of the day, we're humans and we're the ones using it. And so we cannot lose sight of the empathy and the process by which we involve that in anything that we build, whether that's through user testing or just the overall sort of experience. But humans are here to stay.
Yeah, that's
well.
Where there, like, there's two points that I think that are really salient. One is, you know, when you actually, you said making humanizing technology, that's the way I always talked about it, is making your team superhuman, right? Because you, if you use technology to take your single human and make them have outputs that are generally larger or faster than what they could do if they were working on their own, right? That's why you give them a keyboard instead of writing on, you know, pen and paper, right? Every single bit of technology is making them more superhuman. And so there's that part. So that means, like, at a baseline, the technology is human driven, right? And technology enhanced. So there's that side of it. And then the other side of it is with the actual, like, what you're creating with all these tools, you want the outcomes to be the kind of thing that other people are going to be interested in, right? So we talk about this all the time. Just because you can do it with a robot doesn't mean that people want to actually use it or interact with it. So everything you're building it for human beings to consume or to be a part of, right?
Right.
And so if you're using, you know, the ChatGPT to write a story, if you write a crappy story with a robot, it's still a crappy story, right?
Right. Exactly.
You have to
And there's one close down there.
Yeah. So you don't want to use technology to create subpar experiences and subpar products and subpar, you know, things. You want to create just the best of the best and leverage the technology in whatever way it makes sense to do so to help you do that.
Yeah.
So.
And so, no, evolution, right? Like you mentioned, your fatal flaw being, perfectionism. And sometimes it's a beta just for the purpose of getting real users in there and then let them carry you to the rest of what those features are that matter to them. I remember when we first had a Google Home in our kitchen and an Alexa, it was dumb because at one point I felt like one was playing off the other and I thought, okay, the robots are talking. This is a little scary. But I actually went in because I drink too much coffee and I set up my usual order at Starbucks and I could just walk into my kitchen and ask it to order and it would send the order in via the mobile app. It would pay for it because it was tied to my credit card and it would get it exactly right with the number of pumps of syrup, et cetera. And the thing is, that was super cool. But the reality is to set that up, I had to go into an app. I had to tie a credit. It was not a small process to actually get it to be easy. And so the end outcome was really cool, but the work wasn't. And I think that really brings home some of the point that you made, which is you want people to actually want to use it. And you've got to make things streamlined and simple enough for people to go, that's not just cool, but it was really easy for me to do too. So I'm a big fan of KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And remember that you're trying to create things where people don't have to think too much to figure things out. You know?
Trying to make their lives better. My my rule of thumb for technology is, could grandma use it? Right. You know, my mom listens to all these podcasts and, you know, she's grandma to, like, you know, 14, 15 grandchildren. And I'm like, if she doesn't see it and go, yep, I would use that, then you still have work to do.
Yes. Good one. I think it's a great rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to talk then about your driving force, right? So we talked a little bit about your common enemy, it's the thing you fight against. And I want to talk about your driving force, which is what you fight for. So just like Spider-Man fights to save New York, or Batman fights to save Gotham, or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information, I want to know, what is it that you fight for in your business, your mission, so to speak?
Gosh, I mean, I think our mission is pretty straightforward. We kind of talked about our tagline, right? Which is about humanizing technology. But our mission is really just to do fantastic things and help solve problems with technology. We believe that the ROI is there for technology. And to be honest with people and to evaluate, and if it's not. And so there are times where there are business challenges that we consult with, think through, and identify that a custom solution isn't what needs to be built. What you actually should do is take this off the shelf thing and tie it to this, and then you can have this much faster and cheaper, back to your sort of iron triangle connection. So really it's about, you know, just contributing back to the world and doing so in a fair and honest and consultative way. We are not always the best fit, and custom software isn't always the only answer. And so that honesty and, you know, treating people the way you want to be treated, I think is really something that we fight for and is just core in our values. One of our core values is fun. And I tell my team, the only part of, you know, the word sort of fun, like, we don't want to be dysfunctional, we want to be fun. And so we want to make sure that we have, you know, we're involved in work. We want to make sure we have fun while we do it. And we want to be a fun partner to our clients too, because life's too short And so I think that's an important part of it as well.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because you guys work in a really cool space, right? Custom technology solutions. It's one of those things that I'm constantly like in my head fighting, not fighting. It's there's lots of software that exists that you can put together to accomplish things that you want to accomplish. And I'm always wondering, where is the line between we've duct taped these solutions together? Or I say duct tape, but you know, the APIs nowadays, they're all pretty good. Yeah. But like you're stringing things together versus when does it start making sense to actually build a custom solution to help around the back end of our company? And I assume you guys probably do both front end and back end stuff for customers.
Sure.
So how do you help people make that decision between where does it make sense to, you know, as an example, use an off the shelf, you know, project management system to, you know, build out your relational databases versus let's build you a custom app that everything goes through, right? You can run your whole process through. How do you guys help businesses make that decision?
Well, it's mainly through a pretty robust discovery process. We ask a lot of questions. And our job, we see it, is to ask questions that they haven't really thought of. And so sometimes it's a startup that says, oh, my business is going to do this and this, so I want you to build this thing that's going to be the baseline of the business. And we sort of serve as maybe a CTO in that role, thinking through the evolution of exactly how they'd go to market to actually completing and delivering their product. There are other times where it is an established client. It might be a large enterprise, publicly traded client that we are coming in and part of our job is to be able to help save them money, in which case custom may not be the right solution. And so what we're doing through our sort of horizon watching is keeping updated on the latest tech stacks, the latest upgrades, making sure that there's a solution where maybe the space they're playing in has sort of priced them out in terms of licensing that software, and they should consider something that's open source. Or maybe they have an entire development team that is licensed in a particular software, so they need to stay in that. So it's really just not predicting the outcome without involving them ultimately in the solution. And I think that's the fun part about it is we get to learn about so many different industries and so many different areas that it's a playground. I think one of the challenges there is as a team, we see a lot of things and then we go, oh, let's go build our own X or Y or Z and make it sort of our own sort of product. And that may be on the horizon one day, but I think, you know, the challenge right now is balancing our time, you know, being able to kind of go grab that and do that with the clients we have and the work that we have to help them be successful. Because as you know, from driving sort of a services-based business, there's billable time and it's a real thing and it's a balance.
So that's where, like, I know in my head, I'm thinking like, if I were to hire you, I'd come to you and be like, hey, here's our whole business and our project management system and all of our operations and our SOPs and everything. It's like, my thing is like, because we're a labor driven company. And so as our clients go up, our labor goes up. So our biggest wins are going to be in labor saving. And so it's like, if we're going to do a custom solution, it would be, hey, can you look through our whole process and go through our process? Can you save us 20% on labor by getting people not doing things that, you know, that software could do, right? Like moving this piece of data from here to here. Or just making sure the next person in row automatically knows that they're supposed to work on the next thing, that kind of stuff. That's where I can see like a custom solution coming in and being like, yep, we could just chop 20% off your labor and make, you know, that would all go straight to profit.
Right, exactly. And to look at it too, where, you know, you can figure out, well, most of what we do can be amortized. And how can you even say we're going to make this improvement in our business that really is going to be paid off over the next couple of years? Because you can, and it is something that, you know, it has a real win for years to come. It's not just the immediacy of it, right? So that's the fun space we get to play
in. Yeah, yeah. Like, just to give our listeners an example of that, this is not a whole custom solution. It was just a really simple like automation we built for our team. And it was for moving all of the big podcast files, right? When we're done with this recording, we hit stop record, like 2.5-3 gigabytes worth of video files from your side and my side get stuck in Squadcast, which is where we're recording. And we need to get those over to, you know, the editing software suite. And we currently have a person who goes in and downloads them all, right, for 30 plus different shows every single week, and downloads them on a really fast computer and moves them over to another one and uploads them somewhere else. And we had a little custom script written that does that with the click of a button. And I was like, it cost a bit of money and a bit of time to get that done. But every time they click that button, it's 20 minutes of labor time saved.
That's right.
Right. And so every time they click the button, 20 minutes, right, the ROI on that is maybe 6 weeks in labor costs. And so I imagine like if you scale out to an entire custom solution for every single thing that's going on in a business, you can really make a case for the ROI of building out custom solutions.
Absolutely. And I'd say that sort of, I'll call it back of the envelope math that you just did there to figure out how long did it take us to build this? What is the savings and when will I reach that ROI? We even help clients build that because ultimately they know that there's a problem. They know there's a solution. They know there will be some investment, but how do they ultimately come to the conclusion of how long that investment you know, payoff is. And a lot of times, depending how large they are, they then have to go forth to somebody else to get, you know, investments approved and how they get it budgeted, et cetera. And so, you know, people that we work with, they don't always do that same logical back of the envelope math. They come to us and go, well, how would I achieve that? How should I look at this? And we help them help really just formulate that and be able to crystallize it so that they have a good idea, but more importantly, it's something to hold us accountable to and to be able to have a goal. Like we dread nothing more than sitting with a prospect and we say, okay, so why do you want to do this? And well, probably the worst answer is, well, you know, my boss said I have this project, so I got to get this done, you know, which, because I'm not personally invested in this, but it got on my plate, right? The really great, you know, clients and prospects are the ones who say, okay, so I'm looking to do this. And by this date, I hope it accomplishes that. Because then we all have targets and it's very clear where we're marching towards. And so our job is to help make that a reality.
I would imagine, like I said, just thinking through like our business and operations, it would be like, how do we save labor costs? How do we improve the customer experience by like making their work better, cheaper, faster, that kind of stuff? So it's like making your team better or making your customer experience better one way or the other, or some variation of all of that combined is really where custom solutions are going to help you make your end product better and make how you deliver that end product better.
That's right.
Yeah.
Got it. We should talk later.
Well, yeah, it sticks in my head too. You mentioned fun. One of the things that I always talk about with my team is like, you should only do that, which only you can do. Right. Which means, you know, things like moving a file from one side to another. If a robot can do that, we should figure out how to get a robot to do that. Right. Because that's not nearly as much fun as if you were actually using your creative talents to do something, you know, creative, right? Things that are like in the realm of what humans should be doing. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about our systems and processes that way. And, you know, we're building a lot of them out with the duct tape stuff, but, you know, getting a custom solution, that means you can really focus in your business on like, hey, every person on your business is doing the things that they're the, you know, highest and best use for them. Right. Yes. And so they're staying in their lanes of creativity and doing the stuff that like, man, you know, we couldn't do what we're doing without you, the human being sitting in this seat doing this work. Right. How do we make that the most fun stuff possible? So you're not working on, you know, all the boring stuff that goes around making it happen.
That's right. I love a good whiteboard session. And whether it's virtual or in person, man, like the more of those we can have, I think the better, you know. So those are those are not the process usually repeated by robots. Those are the real humans in a room thinking about, you know, same solution.
I was actually just laughing with the other day with my ops manager, and because we were trying to solve this a bigger problem. And I was like, I just need to write this all up on a whiteboard, sit down with a cup of coffee and stare at it for like 2 hours. And she laughed at me and she was like, you just want to stare at it? I'm like, I just need to stare at it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. Or I take a picture of it. Like half of my phone is filled with pictures of whiteboards. And I'm like, I wish I had better handwriting. Because if too much time has gone by, there's no telling what that whiteboard says. But I have a picture of it. So it's committed.
You can see it. You've got it on there. Yeah. I use a little digital whiteboard because if I wrote it down, I wouldn't be able to remember it at all. I'd be like, yep, I wrote things there. That was probably even in English the day that I wrote it. But looking back on it, it's not English anymore.
Right. Not anymore. Nah.
So I want to flip and talk about some practical things. We call this your hero's tool belt. And just like every superhero has a tool belt with awesome gadgets like batarangs and web slingers and laser eyes or, you know, big magical hammer that you can spin around and fly with. I want to talk about the top one or two tools you couldn't live without as the CEO of a company like yours. Could be anything from your notepad to your calendar to your marketing tool, something you use to actually do your job every day. Something you think is essential to getting your job done. What is that number one or maybe number one and two tools that you use every day?
Gosh, I would say number one, it's been around forever, even prior to this role, just pretty much since I've been, you know, a career professional, and that's my to-do list. And people used to make fun of it all the time because naturally it's evolved. I used to write it down. I have a whole color coding system of highlighters, which some people listening to this will appreciate remembering making fun of me for it. Because it was in yellow, it was a different meaning than if it was in pink or green or how the whole week went. And then I would redo it because I actually printed it and highlighted things, right?
Nice.
Now, of course, it's 100% digital and it is not remotely from the same sort of cloth of highlighting different colors and color codes with a legend. But the same sort of principle applies. Like there's too many things as there would be for anyone on my to-do list. And so I capture things, I organize them in very specific, you know, I guess groupings. And then I go through it and I make sure that I'm highlighting what absolutely has to get done today. Like the big rocks, you've probably sort of heard that sort of metaphor for how do you make sure that the big rocks get done and you don't just tackle all the little pebbles and the big rocks never move. I think the second one probably flows into that pretty simply, which is in order to be effective at making, you know, a significant and progressive move, I have to deploy time blocking. I'm one of those people that can get distracted. I'm one of those people that likes talking. I'm an extrovert by nature, so when someone says, hey, are you available? Sure, let's meet. I just want to talk instead of like going back and forth on, you know, a bazillion email. But in the end, if I didn't block specific time to say, I'm going to go heads down in this and remove some of that distraction, there would just not be the possibility of executing as much as I can. I find that I kind of know my certain times of the day where I'm most effective. Those are the times that I'll block and just do my very best to cherish them and hold them tight so that they aren't interrupted. And then there are different days where I know they're meant for less productive work as it is moving those big rocks. It's okay if those are a lot more cut up throughout the day and interruptive and that sort of thing. But if I didn't sort of cordon off that space, I would really struggle for sure.
Yeah, I love the idea of the to-do list. I'm still trying to figure out what the best option for a to-do list for me is and figure out how to organize it and do all that. As you know, as my role continues to grow, as our company gets bigger, like I just brought on an executive assistant and now he's like helping me manage my to-do list in the morning. And man, it's such a process because every time I turn around, there's 15 more things that are added onto the list. It's like every time you complete something, 15 more things get added. So it's like a never ending list of things to do as you run the company. And you're still, you know, I'm still in the process of putting on more than one hat, you know, because we're smaller. And so, you know, you have to be able to switch gears and all that. And so to your point, the time blocking has been really interesting for me. I have a modified version of the concept that I've been talking about for a few years, and I call it micro completions.
Okay.
And what I've been doing is looking at like, hey, whatever the big task is, and looking at like, hey, I've got, you know, 45 minutes right now, or an hour, or 20 minutes, or whatever your block of time that you have available is, and look at my to-do list. And instead of I'm going to tackle this big project and I'm going to do this thing, I'm looking at, hey, what on my to-do list can I take from start to finish in whatever my time block is available?
Right.
And so what I've realized is after doing that, you can stack completions, right? I got 20 minutes,
yes,
complete something. I got 45 minutes, complete something. I got an hour and a half, complete something. Like, you know, and every time you complete something, you know, it snowballs, right? And then you get incredibly productive really fast. And so like, it's a slightly modified version of time blocking where instead of saying, hey, I've got an hour, I'm going to work for an hour on, you know, whatever it is. It's like, okay, I've got this much time. What's a task that I can take from start to finish in that amount of time? And I just call those micro.
I mean, I love that. I think it's really important because to me at the end of the day, it's not really a productive or great day if I felt like I didn't complete anything, even if it's small. Like I used to add things to my to-do list. I feel like to cross them off. Like you want to have that level of completionism. And so even if they're micro, I think that's a win. And you got to take the wins when you can get them. So I think that's a really smart idea.
Yeah. I'd even go down to like, I've done this a little bit. Like, you know, you're working on copy for something and I'd be like, listen, I got to write this whole article. That means I've got like a headline. I got 20 minutes. I'm going to write the headline, right? And you might try 20 different headlines or whatever, but you're like, got a headline, right? And it's checked off your list.
Yeah.
Micro completion. Yeah. Headline written for that article that I need to get done.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's amazing how much it helps fight procrastination and it helps fight getting, you know, it just gets things off your to-do list because you're completing things. So I find that really helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about the to-do list is you're right. It's never going away entirely. I mean, it's going to always be there because people and yourself are adding things to it. But if it's organized and you know where to focus, then it should give you some sense of peace that all the things out there have a little bit of organization to them and that, you know, you'll get to them. I want somebody to tell me, and I haven't totally lived by this rule, but I kind of liked it, which said, if something has been on your to-do list for 2 full weeks, and you've not chosen to pick it up and execute it, do it, whatever, it should fall off because it's not important enough. And I thought, wow, hey, that kind of made me nervous because there's some big things on there that have been lingering for 2 weeks. I didn't feel like I could just take them off entirely. So maybe I need to sort of tweak that rule a little bit, but I like the idea of, you know, the sense of there's only so much time and the urgency that comes with certain things, like that's what makes them important, not just because I put it on there, you know?
Kind of nerd as me. When you said that, I was thinking I could put a field on my to-do list for age that would like, you know, so we're at a week, we're at 2 weeks and it like changes its priority or like just flags itself in some way when it gets to 2 weeks. We're like, do you actually care about this one? Right.
Right. Can I just like fuck this off because you know what? It's just past the, you know, too age,
it's too old. Yeah. So, or maybe you just need to delegate it, right? Because it's not something that, you know, you just don't, I don't know. It's just not something that you enjoy or something that you're going to pick up or something that's not, it's just not your highest and best use. So it probably shouldn't have been on your to-do list in the first place. So I love that.
Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built that powers the Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
So I want to talk then about one more thing, and that's your guiding principles, right? So one of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever brings them to Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one or two principles that you live your life by, right? Maybe something you wish you had known when you first started out on your own journey as an entrepreneur.
Gosh, I mean, I would say just my overall, you know, values. Certainly I live my life by, like, which is treating people how I want to be treated. But I think as far as like my career and just thinking about principles that I've kind of held dear is I hire people who are curious, and I'm innately curious. It's one of those things that, like, I don't like someone to just tell me this is how this works. I want to, like, get my hands dirty, have firsthand knowledge, experience, and then go, oh, okay, I get it. I really view someone, you know, potential, mine included, in their ability to be, you know, agile and their ability to evolve and to learn. And so I think, if I was to, you know, sort of wrap it up, I guess I would say, just, you know, be a lifelong learner. I did that in part because, you know, I enjoy it. I'm curious. But I also think that, you know, you get to an age where you go, oh, well, I got to this level in a company or this title or this whatever. So I'm not sure I need to keep learning, but everything is evolving, especially in tech. And so to me, it's about maintaining, you know, your own vulnerability to things changing and being smart and making sure that you're continuing to grow as a person. And I think that's probably, yeah, that's probably what I would say would be a code I live by. I never thought I would start learning Python in my 50s, but it's
required.
Yep. You know, here I am. I'm like, not even a spoken language, and I'm going to go learn that. But here I am coding Python. And it's not because I intend to go become the developer after this. It's my ability to understand every aspect of what others I'm working with are doing. And so I don't know. Maybe I'm just out to prove that you can truly teach an old dog new tricks. Maybe that's what it's about.
No, I love that. I have a rule. I don't know if it's a rule as much as just a habit, but, like, I always have a skill I'm working on that is outside of work. And then so I always have one that's inside of work as well, but it's just like, it's a new thing that I'm not, you know, so, like, over the last couple of years, it's been drawing and calligraphy and piano and juggling. And I did carpentry. I did all of the carpentry and learned carpentry. So I built a desk and cabinets and beds and, like, a whole bunch of things. I built a, you know, cutting boards, plumbing, electrical. So, like, I've over the last, like, 7 years, I've been just, like, stacking these random skills that some of them serve purposes, but some of them is just because I'm interested in that at the moment. And it's exercising that muscle of learning things. And then do the same thing in the business too, right? I mean, you mentioned learning Python. I'm in the process of learning JavaScript. But I don't need to know JavaScript. I don't particularly have to write it or do anything, but I have people on my team who do. And so I can't communicate with them and tell them what I want if I don't understand the language and understand its capabilities, right? I don't want to be asking my programmers for circle squares, right?
Yeah. Well, and also be empathetic, right? So if you're asking them for something, you're empathetic to how long it should take. You have a good idea of what they'll be going through to be able to solve that. And that, to me, adds value, you know, for being able to lead them. So I think that's, I mean, it's fun, right? Like, it's hard, but it's also really fun because, you know, with that curiosity, I think it's fun anyway.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that. And so I've always got stuff, you know, learning different things about automations or machine learning or whatever it is we're working on in our business. There's always, like, something new you're always challenging yourself with. And it's that, I think it's that desire to be curious. One of the things we talk about on the show all the time is, like, giving yourself permission to play, right? As an entrepreneur, that, like, it's not, you will be better as an entrepreneur if you are taking the time to play both inside your work and outside your work, right? whether that's rest and relaxation or learning something or exploring something new. And you really get that, I don't know, that joy that comes from learning and whatnot, that it just opens up your mind and helps you solve problems better, faster for people.
I completely agree. I mean, I always, you know, if I'm in the middle of something and it seems really hard, I just kind of repeat back to whether that's like running in the morning or whether that's doing something that, you know, hitting a roadblock on. I just remind myself, like, hey, do hard things. You're willing to do them. A lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
And sort of enough to just kind of stay ahead.
One of my mentors growing up always used to say, do the hard things first and everything else will be easy. And
good point.
Yeah, that was I mentioned earlier, my son and I are doing martial arts together and we're about a year and a month into our training there. And what's funny about that is like our warm-ups now used to put us on a floor a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
see that. It's your life sort of evolution right in front of you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, because we're willing to do the hard things, it makes our baseline different. Right. And that's obviously in the world of martial arts, but it applies everywhere. Right. If you're willing to do the work and it doesn't always have to be work. Like, sometimes it's play. Right. If you're willing to do the play, learn Python, not because you're going to ever, you know, need to do Python for your work, but just because you're going to learn it. That's hard, but it's also fun.
Yeah.
And it's going to make your baseline just significantly different than anyone else around you. Right. You're hard to compete with.
Yeah, I guess so. I haven't even thought about it from a competitive perspective, but yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that puts you in the polymath category, right? You know, someone who's good at a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think that's a really cool place to end our interview, but I do wrap our interview all the time with something I call the Heroes Challenge. And the Heroes Challenge is simple, and it's how we get access to stories we might not otherwise find on our own, because, you know, not everyone else out doing the podcast rounds like you and I might do. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on The Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
Okay. An individual named Forrest. He is a natural storyteller. I think he'd be interesting. But from an entrepreneurial perspective, grew up in a large family-owned business and then had the opportunity to take a section of it, take it and go run with it in a totally different path. And, you know, to me, the thing that would be interesting is the sort of dichotomy between understanding and learning from what came before you and then taking that and determining where to sort of pivot and take a piece of it yourself in a totally different direction.
That's really cool. Well, we'll see if we can reach out and get Forrest on the show. They don't always say yes, but sometimes we get cool interviews out of that. So our send off here, you know, in comic books, there's always the crowd of people at the end who are cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So as we close, Arn Alex, that is, where can people find you? Where can they light up the bat signal, so to speak? And say, hey, we would love to get help with some of the custom solutions for our business. But I think more importantly than where is who are the right types of people to raise their hands and reach out and ask for your help?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are folks from just listening to this that recognize that there are just business challenges that they might need help framing them, recognizing that they see the value of technology, not just as an investment, but to be able to truly bring value back to their business. And our website is just insight.net, so easy enough to find. You can also find me on LinkedIn. And so both of those would be great places. Then I hope people reach out. That'd be fun.
Yeah. And I know sometimes custom solutions, depending on the size of your business, can seem daunting and intimidating, but they almost always ROI positively if you understand how to put the math together. You saw us do a little bit of back of napkin math here on the show, but you guys do this professionally, right? That's like all you do. So if you're curious.
Right. And we have clients that are startups, and that's part of the beauty of not being a company that's owned by a larger sort of conglomerate of agencies or private equity. We have flexibility. And sometimes what we do when we find a really interesting startup and, you know, business relationships, we manage through it with rev shares and say, hey, let's figure out how we go to market together doing this. So there are options regardless of what size of business you are. And to your point, since they're almost always ROI positive, it's just a matter of reaching that sort of best fit at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think ROI stuff is interesting because people are like, you have to don't look at things as cost, look at things as an investment. And it's like, that's really great, but you still have to have the money for the investment. So your business may not be ready for it yet, but something like a custom solution, it's almost always worthwhile to at least explore and find out, you know, maybe it's something you want to put together in the targets, because it's another one of those things that like, man, there's a lot of competitive advantages to having your own custom solution that is built exactly for your processes or built exactly for the outcomes you're building for your customers, both in efficiencies for your team and efficiencies for the outcomes for your clients. I think it's almost always worth exploring. So anyways, if you're in that category, definitely take the time to reach out to Nikki. Appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us today. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our audience before there's the stop record button?
I was just going to say, thank you so much for having me today. This has been fun. I love the idea of the superhero theme and appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.